Oh, good morning, Redemption Church. Now, I want to tell you about yesterday that was really cool. While we certainly had an RC group that was in the parade, we had RC and other groups as well. And that's what I think is so cool. We talk about for the good of the city, and we as individuals wanting to make investment for the good of the city. And so as I was walking down the road to get to our group, I love the fact that I'm like, hey, there's some RC people with the Cedar Crest football team, and there's some RC people in the group for Duval Performing Arts, and there's some RC people for the Dance Emporium. And it's just cool to see how our people just take ownership of really making an investment in our community in the name of Jesus, with the love of Jesus, to touch the lives of others so that hopefully in that process, others will come to follow Jesus as well. And that kind of brings us to the topic of the day. And when I think about Jesus, one of the things I love is the fact that he was the ultimate storyteller. In fact, in the Gospel of Mark, it actually says that when it came to the masses of people, he only taught them in stories, in parables. And so there's one particular story where he talks about a farmer that goes out to scatter seed. Now, this is larger than it appears, right? But it's a seed nonetheless, and it captures the essence. And so Jesus tells the story about how this farmer is just throwing seed out, and it's falling on different soil conditions. And each one of those conditions is a little bit like the receptivity of a person's heart or thinking. Some people, very open. Others guarded, some completely closed off. But the job nonetheless is to simply go with the humility and grace of Christ, and we just keep kind of sharing, showing, loving, giving this message of Jesus that changes everything. And so really then that is the subject matter of the day. We've been looking at kind of our why we exist and how we do things as a church. We talk about the fact that for us, man, we just own in our bones that life is better with Jesus. Not always easy, not always simple, but man, every person that comes to Jesus, their big message is my life was this way, and then after Jesus, it was changed, it was different. My life is so much better with him. We want that to be the ownership of every person here at Redemption Church. But then from that, we want to then emphasize certain values. And so we've had a list of those. For example, we said we seek to be like Jesus, right? That's the top of our list. We err on the side of grace and how we do that. We take the Bible seriously. We encourage everybody sweeps, everybody serves, everybody's involved. We do things for the good of the city, and we believe life is best lived with others. But today is all about this idea that we ask ourselves as individuals and as a church collectively, who can I invite? Who can I invite on this journey? Who can I invite to church? Who can I invite to watch my life, to let them look closely, to see how real Jesus is? That's the essence of who can I invite. And so today we're going to cover that topic, and hopefully in a way that encourages, maybe stings a little at times, because I think this is so important for us to get right. And so I want to go ahead and just remind you, we have an app, and in the app there are notes you can follow along with today. That'll be fantastic. We're covering a lot of ground in a short amount of time, so we're going to have to whip through this quick. But if you would like to take notes, you can open the app. And then with that, I'm going to go ahead and pray, and we're just going to, man, we're going to go like hurry up offense right now. We're just going to get after it. So let's go and pray together. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you that you came into this world to give life and life abundant. And you came into this world to stretch that abundant life into everlasting life. And at the core of that, it's about knowing you, that we know you so truly and authentically and deeply and personally that it's powerful, that it's life transformative. It makes us different than the way maybe business is conducted in the world. It causes us to take seriously how your kingdom shapes all things and makes all things new. And so I pray today that we will love that, we will long for that, we will look to that, we will seek to be your hands and your feet, your heart, and really your ethos for the world. And so help us to be what it is you have made us to be, and help us to do it with such kindness and thoughtfulness and love of the world around us, because we love you. And so Jesus, we thank you and we praise you and we look to you in your good and perfect name. Amen. So when I think about Jesus and kind of what it is he came to do, I've said this many times, he came into the world as a missionary. And so what that means is he says, you know, I'm going to leave my homeland, I'm going to go to this other place that needs to know me, and I'm going to make a profound investment there so that I can change the well-being, I can change the trajectory, I can change the entire essence of their lives into something they were meant to be. I can reconnect them to what they were originally designed as. We were image bearers meant to be in relationship with God. We lose track of all of that, but Jesus comes to restore it. So in that sense, when I think about what Jesus is doing, it's ultimately a missional endeavor. And then when we come to follow Jesus, we're invited into that same sense of mission. But what that means then about this message of Jesus is that for us, it's not simply something to be held or simply held dear to us and only us, but really it's meant to be something that transforms us, that takes root and grows in us, produces fruit through us, and then from that we share that with the people around us. We share it in all sorts of ways, right? But fundamentally, that's the core of it. We want to share this thing. And we want to do it in a way that captures, again, the essence and the ethics and the ethos of who Jesus really is. I highlight this and start at this place because here's what I also know. I'm very much a student of culture. Like, it really is probably my second job. The first job is I teach the Bible. The second job is I try to understand culture as it relates to then teaching the Bible in the context of this culture. And when I look at the culture, I also realize there is a lot of confusion, there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of damaged goods, if you will, directly connected to this missional endeavor. In trying to share Jesus and show Jesus and showcase Jesus, there's been ways that that's been done that has brought harm more than good, that's broken hearts more than healed hearts, and therefore we as a church, we want to be really, really sensitive of not just sharing Jesus, but doing it in the most effective way, and I think the most Christ-like way possible. And really, maybe at the center of that then is this passion and drive to say, I want to make sure as I am sharing the seed that is the message, I'm in that showing to the world, this is who Jesus is. This is how Jesus thinks. This is how Jesus invests. This is the way he felt about people. This is the way he cared for people. This is the way he acted toward people. And all of that is the way then we are sharing with people. Right, I really do believe that Jesus is compelling, and we have to really get back to those things to showcase and highlight just how compelling he is. What that's going to require of us today then is to start at the beginning and start with a reality. I think it's true, and it's just this idea of really owning and understanding the challenge that we face, to understand that there are some barriers that have been built, that if we're going to really do this well, and be, again, really compelling and effective, we have to kind of backtrack a little bit, go, what are some of the things that have happened to get this maybe a little bit more on track? Because there's been a lot of things. In fact, I've been a pastor now for over 30 years when I consider my internship and being a youth pastor and now a lead pastor. And during that time, there's a lot that's transpired, a lot. And when it comes to how people then perceive our Christian faith or perceive Jesus or perceive our message, I'm finding more and more that's a tough nut to crack, literally. When you talk to people out in the community, you realize there's more guardedness, there's more criticism, there's more uncertainty when you start talking spirituality or more concretely, Christian faith stuff. And when you ask questions and you analyze it, you begin to find out it's not because they go, we've never heard. We've never heard this Jesus message. We've never heard this good news thing. We've never heard about Christianity. That's not the thing. They're like, no, we've heard. But maybe more deeply, what we're wondering is, will we see the fruit of that which we hear? Are we going to see Jesus in action in the lives of Jesus followers? Or are we going to continue to see kind of this religious slash political slash cultural warrior thing? And then what do I do with all of that? See, I do think that that is the space that we are in today. In fact, if anything, I would say that it isn't so much people go, we haven't heard a witness, but maybe they've come in contact with an unhealthy witness. And I'm sure some of you, if not many of you, have had a little bit of that yourself, or you've seen that happen in some context or capacity. And so again, I think for this morning, it means we just have to own some of those things. And I think the difference, the way I look at it this, is the difference between Jesus versus Christianity. And when this is up there, you'll notice that Christ is in a slightly lesser font than anity. because I do think that this is sometimes the difference. In fact, I've spent a lot of time just interacting with people that are unchurched or whatever else, and I find that there's certain things that I go, this is so strange. In fact, it goes back to last week a little bit where we looked at the Barna Report where they said, hey, we like Jesus, we even like his message. We're uncertain about his followers or his messengers. And so in that, I was trying to share the idea that it really should be evenly matched. To the degree that maybe somebody doesn't like Jesus, man, they shouldn't like us. That makes perfect sense. But that to the degree that they like Jesus or warm to Jesus, open to Jesus, that should also match us. They should have that same sense because we're seeking to be like Jesus. But what happens is kind of our organized thing gets in there, our religiosity slips in, and now we have to contend with that. And so I'll have conversations with people, and they'll just flat out be like, man, Jesus seems cool. I'm okay with Jesus. I'm interested in Jesus. I'm just not sure about his followers. I've been a little wounded by them sometimes. Or I remember one person said, you know what, I used to go to church, but I just couldn't find Jesus there. So I found that Jesus was easier to find outside the church than in the church. And that breaks my heart if that's going to be what people experience, right? Or they'll look and they'll say, Christians seem to complain a lot in society about culture and that they feel oppressed and attacked and marginalized and they're under threat. And they're like, but Jesus never complained about those things. He said to expect that and face it with joy. So what do I do with that? So there are people out there that I do think are genuinely interested, but they're trying to work through the baggage that's been placed out there amidst kind of the cultural conversation. If anything, and we've said it here before, I think Christianity has a PR challenge. Now here's good news. When I think about Redemption Church, many of those things I don't see. And some of the commentary I have about people in our community, they'll be like, Christians, da 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 da, but Redemption, and then they have something really positive to say. So good, praise God, thank you, keep up that good work. More than ever, I think we have to be aware of that. Like, hey, we're on the right track. Keep priming that pump, keep doing that thing, because we are marching uphill in a cultural conversation. And again, in that conversation, the world is not saying we see too much of Jesus in Christianity. They're saying, man, we want to see more Jesus in that religion, in that system, amongst those people, right? That are, again, thinking like him and acting like him and doing like him, because they tend to go, it seems more about just like being moral referees and blowing whistles and throwing flags in society and saying this sinner does this and that sinner does that and this group is bad and that group is bad, and they're just longing to see this very counterintuitive Jesus that enters the scene and makes friends with and cares for the people that he's amidst. That's where we want to be. We don't want to fall victim to what is easily the criticism that gets leveled against us. It's that dreaded H word, hypocrite, or hypocrisy. In fact, in another Barna report I was looking at this week, they asked the question, what causes you to either disbelieve that Christianity can be true, or even ask Christians, what causes you to sometimes doubt your own faith? So it was a super interesting study, and it was interesting when it looked at the non-religious people, their number one thing was the hypocrisy of Christians causes me to not believe the message of Jesus is true, because if it was true, they would be different. And we've had all sorts of scandals and problems and leaders that really don't emulate Jesus, that claim Jesus, and so this creates part of the problem. So they're like, that's the number one issue we have. They just don't look like Jesus. When it came to people of other faiths, their number one thing was the same thing. What causes us to wonder if Christianity can be true or Jesus is real is, again, the hypocrisy of people. If they're transformed by a living God living in them, a Holy Spirit that dwells in them to produce fruit in them, they should probably look different and be more consistent, and we don't always see that. What I thought was really interesting was when they asked Christians, what is the number one thing that causes you to struggle with your belief and maybe doubt? The number two for them was hypocrisy. Fellow Christians that don't live it out, right? So everybody kind of agrees this is the thing. And so when I talk about this, I don't want to just leave that out. I really don't. Because again, when it comes to this message that we share, I think what we want to do is look and go, man, it so matters. It's so precious. It's so life-changing. It's so enriching toward the world. It's so fulfilling of what God promised to do to Abraham. I'm going to bless the world and bless the nations. I'm going to restore all things and make all things new. That's the very end of the book. At Revelation, I make all things new. This is the way that that happens. And so we want to make sure that this has so grabbed us and so changed us, and we want to live in alignment with this so much that people go, it's undeniable. There's a real God behind this. There is a real Jesus doing stuff, and we want to see that in our lives as well. And that means we need to really show. Because again, I don't think the problem is they say, we haven't heard it. No, they're just saying we haven't seen it. Not widespread, not big enough. Especially when we go into things like now, political cycles. Whew. And people say whatever they want to say on social media. And all the more, they kind of just look and they go, wow. It's what you think of us. It's what you think of our world. It's what you think of the people that don't agree with you. That's not compelling. That's repelling, right? And we want to be compelling. Besides, we know that what we do is going to matter more than even what we say. Not that it means we don't say. We need to say. That's part of the message. But what we do is going to be the lion's share of subsidizing what we say. And you know it. You can fill in these blanks, right? Mom and dad taught you well. For example, see if you can end this. Actions speak louder than. So good. You know exactly what it is. It's not what you say. It's what you. How about this? Jesus said, you will know them by their. This is a tough one. It could go either love or fruits. I'll take both, all right? But that's what it is. It's action again. Even when we look at research, they say communication, 70 to 90% of our communication is nonverbal, right? It's the countenance that we have, the disposition we show, the things that we engage in, and all of that, man, that is fertile ground. That is fertile ground to show that Jesus is legit. And so for us as a church, we have this focus about disrupting stereotypes. Because again, especially working at the gym, I love working at the gym, right? So I do it just a little bit nowadays, but it gives me access to all sorts of different people, and you end up in conversations. And for the longest time, I try to ward off telling them I'm a pastor. But that's by design. I'm not ashamed. I just know as soon as I say it, they're like, oh, I'm sorry about my language, and I'm sorry, and I'm gonna be goody two-shoes now with you. And I'm like, no, just be yourself. I just want you to be yourself, right? But before they find that out, you can have all kinds of interesting spiritual conversation. You can learn all the tidbits and the stuff and everything else. And in that, I kind of learned, like, they have stereotypes of what they expect a pastor to be, which is why I try to ward it off for a while. Or they have stereotypes of what Christians are if they don't have real proximity to them. And so I find that part of the way we deal with the stereotype is that we simply want to refrain from doing or saying things we shouldn't do or say. Right? That we want to be really, really aware of that. Because when I look at Jesus, that's his brilliance. Sometimes Jesus says something, and sometimes he refrains from saying something. Sometimes he does the thing, and other times he doesn't do the thing that everybody anticipates because he's just disrupting the stereotype. And so I think even for us, when we're thinking about how we get this critical message into the lives of people because it changes everything, we want to be thinking, hey, what would Jesus say here? What would Jesus refrain from saying here? What would Jesus do in this instance? What would Jesus refrain from doing in this instance? I find that this whole what would Jesus do thing is so utterly helpful. It really is. Because it kind of recalibrates us. Because we do live in kind of this echo chamber right now of modern American evangelical Christianity where there's a little bit of a tone of our mission is to protect our Christianity, or our mission is to make sure we lock down our religious liberty. And Jesus is like, that's not what I told you to do. Right? He's like, that's not the, if you're fighting to preserve that, you're probably gonna fail this. Because this requires something altogether different than the things we tend to do as Americans. And so today I wanna give us a little bit of a roadmap. Just some ways to prioritize the most effective communication of this message that changes everything. And it's not going to come through self-determination. I'm not here to shame you. I'm not here to guilt you. I'm not here to try to force you to do a thing that you don't want to do. No, I'm hoping if anything, we go, oh, this is the map. And from that, I'll be impassioned to this. I'll be hungry for this. I'll love to go do this. I will love to give up myself so as to hopefully reach somebody else. Like, that's my hope for today. And so I'm just going to, again, walk through a map. I'm going to try to do this as quick as possible. But I think it's a map that's key. And it starts with this in your notes. It's number two. And I kind of talked about this last week. It means we need to believe him. We need to believe Jesus, not simply to believe in Jesus. Right? To me, there's a difference. Now, the New Testament talks both about believing in and believe, but I think in our current cultural climate, to say I believe in a thing is just a watered-down deal, right? It's like having a Mai Tai at an all-you-can-eat luau. It's just syrup. It doesn't have any real life to it. And in the same way, we live in a time where people go, I believe in ghosts. I believe in UFOs. I believe in Bigfoot. I believe in the Easter Bunny. I believe in Santa Claus. I believe in, I don't know, man, green energy. No, I believe in fossil fuel. I mean, people believe in all sorts of things they want to just lay claim to. What I find in this phrasing of believe in is it doesn't have a lot of teeth behind it. It's so easy for me to just casually say, oh, I believe in that, and I believe in that. But see, I think Jesus wants something deeper. He wants us to truly believe what he says, like own it, right? Because again, even in the Christian faith, it's easy to say, I believe in the Bible, I believe in Jesus, I believe in the gospel, I believe in the kingdom, I believe in the afterlife, I believe in whatever. But if you really, really believe it, that's a different thing. It's just in your bones, man. You're like, man, I'm living for this, I'm dying for this, I'm investing into this, I'm caring about, I'm gonna figure out how to do this amazingly. That's believe, that's real, like believe stuff. In fact, one of my favorite little kind of communities of faith in the New Testament is this church. It's early on in the story, but it's a church that is born in the community of Thessalonica. So if you read the expose on church planning and the spread of Christianity in the New Testament, you'll find the book of Acts. And in the book of Acts, Paul's rolling, man, and he's going and he's getting beat. He's going, he's getting beat. If anything, you know why you know Paul believes? He's willing to keep getting beat, right? So he believes. He doesn't just believe in, he believes. And so he rolls into Thessalonica, so not much Jewish presence there. And from that, in weeks, a church is born, man. Like, you read the account in Acts, it's like he preaches for like 3 weeks, and boom, people are jumping on board. And when they jump on board, they believe. And the proof that they believe is that you read it in the book of Acts, they start getting punked. They're the first church that we can see that gets persecuted by non-Jewish parties. Eventually, Rome's like doling it out to everybody, but really, they're the first ones that deal with local persecution. And what happens is the local leadership says, if you don't worship Caesar by a little pinch of incense to him when you go into the marketplace, you can't buy and sell. So they shut down the market for these new followers of Jesus. And so now their livelihood's at risk, their kids aren't gonna eat, they're ostracized from community and everything else. That's the test, whether you really believe what Jesus says and you do it his way, or you go, no, I gotta take things in my own hands and I believe in him, but I'm gonna do it kind of in earthly ways. No, man, they believe. They believe. I love what Paul says in 2 Thessalonians, or 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, rather. He says, don't you remember, dear brothers and sisters, how we have worked among you night and day? We toiled to earn a living so that we would not be a burden to any of you as we preach the good news to you. So even Paul's like, man, we gotta pass the plate, but we didn't. Like, we worked a full-time job and then we shared with you on the side because we wanted you to realize, man, this message changes everything. He says, we pleaded with you and encouraged you and urged you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy. Because he knows, as soon as they felt the pressure, you're gonna wanna respond, retaliate, defend, protect yourself, whatever it is. He knew that, so he goes, man, we urged, we pleaded, we begged, right? He says, why? For he called you to share in his kingdom and his glory. Now, just so I can put this in a little bit of perspective for us, the glory is someday. It is not today, it's not next week, it's not next year, it's not while you're breathing on this planet. The glory is to come. But the kingdom is both now and later. And when he is saying this, he's got in his mind, like, man, Jesus talked a lot about the kingdom 150 times between Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That is a mandate. And the kingdom is always the same thing. It's upside down and backwards. You know my lingo. You want to be great, be the least. You want to be first, you want to be last. If you're a bunch of Thessalonians and you got your community bearing down on you and they don't like you because they're your enemy, what does Jesus say to do as a kingdom person? Love them, do good to them, bless them, and pray for them. Not they're taking my money, they're taking my jobs. He says, no, man, you love the people that hate you right now. You turn the other cheek and you go the extra mile. You keep trying to figure out how you can do right by these people who are doing wrong by you. That's kingdom. So what Paul is urging them there to do is not simply believe in Jesus and do their own thing. He's saying believe Jesus and do his thing when it doesn't make any sense at all. Stay in that pocket. Give that focus. Let that be your drive. Just keep embodying Jesus. And they did. They didn't complain, they didn't fear, they didn't revolt, they didn't protest, they didn't get all frustrated by the conditions. They leaned into this Jesus thing. Thus, Paul says, we never stop thanking God that when you received his message from us, you didn't think of our words as merely human ideas. You accepted what we said as the very word of God. Which, by the way, when you read the New Testament, sometimes we think Word of God and we think Bible. That's like a third-tier idea. The first tier for the early Christians was Jesus is the Word. So you receive the Word as it is. In fact, the Jesus of God, the Christ of God. And he says, and this Word, Jesus, and his message continues to work in you who believe. See, I love this because, again, it wasn't like they just said, hey, let's have potlucks and Bible studies and prayer groups and post memes and everything else right now. We got to believe this, man. We got to believe it so much that we do it. And by doing it, that's going to give an open door. That's going to give opportunity, which it's crazy because when you continue to read the letters of the Thessalonians, you know what Paul says? Man, it's blowing up with you guys now, right? There's two letters and he's like, it's blowing up. And the gospel is going everywhere, so much so, people are believing because you believe, and it goes so much so, we don't even need to talk anymore. You've taken it up and run with it. See, I think that's epic right there, man. But that happens when we embrace kingdom distinctive, when we realize that Jesus is the only one that can change everything, and so we say, I'm gonna act and react in the same way I see him doing as I read his story, right? And I'm going to do that even when people think it's silly or naive or doesn't work. And I'll tell you the most painful thing. You will sometimes be told by your fellow believer, it's naive, it's silly, and it doesn't work. The saddest thing I face is when I get reprimanded for believing the gospel of the Sermon on the Mount, which I believe the Sermon on the Mount is much of the gospel, when I'm told that doesn't work today. You can't turn the other cheek and get ahead. Because there's bad people who want to do bad things. I'm like, I'm sorry, Jesus, I got my Sharpie out. I just got to mark some of this out. It doesn't work today. Right? This is the only thing that works today, honestly. It's the only thing. But I also think in doing this, you can't just white-knuckle it. You can't just force it. You can't just endure in it. I think to do this well, you could do it for a short little stint, like a sprint, under your own strength, but you can't long-haul it. You can't marathon it. Unless there's something deeper driving that, and that's the next thing in your notes. You need to know him. You need to authentically know Jesus, not just know about Jesus. See, that's the supernatural staying and sticking power that comes into this equation. And again, I think about this with Paul, right? Here was this dude, was religious, was committed, went to church every Saturday because he was Jewish, loved the Bible, hated Jesus. Hated Jesus. But man, he had all the pedigree, the power, the prestige, you name it, he had it. And then one day he comes to this direct intersection where the person of Jesus physically and audibly punks him into the dirt and says, dude, I'm going to use you for a new thing. And in that moment, it's like Paul realizes everything I held dear, everything I thought would work, all the ways I thought we were going to reform the world and the name and image of God, it was wrong. And now he comes into this life with Jesus. And he didn't just believe in Jesus, he believed him, and he wanted more. So from all of this, he says in Philippians, I once thought that these things were valuable, all my pedigree, my power, my privilege, my prestige, everything. I thought it was worth something. But now I consider them worthless because of what Christ has done. Yes, everything else is worthless when compared to the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. He's like, that's what I want to do. He goes on into verse 10. I want to know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. So he wants resurrection power in his life today to do what he does. So it's not just his strength, it's Christ's strength. But then he says, and I want to suffer with him, sharing in his death. That gets a little spooky. But this is the difference between believing in and believe. When you really believe, what you realize is it's not just I want to know him and I want to know his power, but the route to knowing him and his power is suffering. It is. I don't know how to break that to us. I wish I could break it differently, right? But if you're going to know the suffering servant, man, you got to suffer like the suffering servant. And I think this is hard because, again, one of the things that will challenge kind of our American heritage Christianity is we go, whoa, wait a minute. If I'm going to suffer, I need to create safeguards so I don't suffer. I need to put things in place so that I'm not persecuted. I need to ensure that that doesn't happen. And Jesus is like, then you're ripping yourself off, man, because part of knowing me is going to be suffering with me and like me and for me. Because I think it's in that space that all the more then it's the challenge, will we lean into what he says to do? That's why I keep saying, man, the top tier command for me is loving enemies. It is the top tier command. I can manhandle a bunch of other stuff. I can make those things happen. But loving your enemy, that takes a grit and a depth, right? To do good to them, pray for them, bless them when they curse you, like all those things. That takes something different. And so again, when we say life is better with Jesus, part of that is, I believe it's proven when we will lean in and do the Jesus thing, when everything in our bones and all of our fears say, don't do that right now. That's too much risk. That's too hard. It's too dangerous. No, I think that is the test, that we really do believe it and we really do know him. And we know him in such a way that as we lean into him more in the suffering, the more he reveals himself to us and lets us know that, hey, I'm suffering with you in this. You're suffering and I'm suffering with you because I suffered for you so that I could be with you to suffer with you as you go through this. And so in that sense, when we are most pressed to not do the Jesus thing because it's going to mean something negative for us, I think that's when Jesus most shows up in our lives and does Jesus-like stuff and moves the needle in our growth. But it's doing the tough kingdom stuff. I think about this with Jesus in John chapter 8. What's Jesus doing there? Arguing with religion. Why? Because Jesus always is arguing with religion. And so Jesus answers and he says to them, if I want glory for myself, it doesn't count. So Jesus did not come to give himself glory or to glorify himself or be in control or be the big dog or whatever else. No, it's not his purpose. He says, no, I want it to be my Father who will glorify me. So I came to do his will, not my own. He says to religion, though, he goes, you guys are going to say that you know God, that he is your God, but you don't know him. You think you do, but you don't, right? He goes, I know him. If I said otherwise, I'd be a liar just like you, but I know him. And you know how he knows him? Not only does he know him, he says, but he also obeys him. See, this is what I love about this idea that, hey, man, I know Jesus. I'm going to know Jesus more. It really comes down to, do we obey him? Do we obey him? And not in the easy stuff, but in the tough stuff. Not the stuff that protects us, but the stuff that puts us at risk. Not the stuff that we go, man, I'm going to be higher and loftier for it, but rather the stuff that puts us in the servant and slave position. Because that's exactly what Jesus did. He literally comes into the world, and he's like, I will make myself the slave and the servant of them all. Of them all. Philippians says that so clearly. And it's like, hey, man, if you want to be like me, then that's what we get to do. We get to do this thing because we're seeking to touch the lives of people, right? This means you can't just know about him. We got to know him, right? Got to know him. From that, we then start to do this thing on behalf of him. And that's number four in your notes, to stand out in the world like him as opposed to standing against the world on behalf of him. Standing like him, not standing against the world on behalf of him, because that is happening. I'm listening to leaders more and more. We got to rise up. We got to resist. We got to fight back. We got to stop the cultural tide. We got to do all these things. And Jesus is like, man, I called you to reach people. I called you to love people where they're at and to reach them where they're at so I can change the trajectory of their lives. That's the whole thing. I think some of these leaders are too busy watching Braveheart and not enough of The Chosen, because if you watch The Chosen, you'll see the thing. You'll see the thing, right? Jesus wasn't the biblical brawler, no. He had different passions and different priorities, right? Touching lives, and from that, those lives are touched to believe, to be changed, and to know him and to grow in him. In fact, one of my favorite quotes comes from probably the wisest person I've ever interacted with. There's a lot of people that are wise. Top tier, most wise person, my wife. Here's her quote. She says, it's always easier to speak on behalf of Jesus than to live on his behalf. Yeah, I heard the hums. It's good. See, I do think that there's a lot of talking, a lot of lecturing, a lot of scolding, a lot of blaming, a lot of fear-mongering. All that stuff is going on. I don't think what the world needs is more voices. It just needs people to live more like Jesus. Like really compellingly live like Jesus. Here's Paul, 2 Corinthians 5. He says, because we understand the fearful responsibility to the Lord, we work hard to persuade others. We work hard to persuade them by what we do, what we say, how we think, how we feel, how we interact with our world. We're persuading. And I love this word persuade. When you look at the etymology, it means this: to thoroughly show that something is pleasant or sweet. To thoroughly show that something is pleasant or sweet. So the way I would say this is we take this message in our lives, it's transformed us, and then we are Sherpas to the world. And we're trying to take people on a journey like, come, check this out. I want to show you how this ends is sweet and pleasant. It's not oppressive. It's not destructive. Doesn't want your bad. It wants your good by God's grace. That's going to be the heart. So we want to lead people in compelling ways to show them what Jesus looks like. Paul continues in that chapter. He says, we are giving you a reason to be proud of us. He's telling the Corinthians, and they've been very divided. Is it Paul? Is it Apollo? Is it this group, that group, these leaders, those leaders, all kinds of stuff. And Paul's like, man, I'm trying to give you a reason to be proud of us so you can answer those who brag about having spectacular ministry. So there was already, it was already happening back then. Like, I'm going to have an epic ministry and all kinds of bells and whistles and cool stuff. And he's like, man, can I tell you? Here's the thing that really makes us stand out. We have a sincere heart. We don't have epic stuff. We have a sincere heart. And from that, he says, Christ's love controls us. And he says, those who receive this new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead, they'll live for Christ. This is why I'm saying it has to be about us looking like Jesus, not us getting the American dream, not us getting what we want, not us fighting for our future. It's just all Jesus, man. I just want what he wants. That's what Paul had in mind too. He says something even more bold. He says, we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view, right? At one time, we did that even of Christ. He says, but now I know that God has given us the task of reconciling people to himself, and he's given us this wonderful message of reconciliation, right? If it's about reconciliation, we come as peacemakers and ambassadors. We don't come as warriors and defenders, right? It's so different. Maybe this is even why he says, we are Christ's ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. Like, that's our tone. We're trying to bridge the divide. We're trying to lower the salsa level. We're trying to alter the conversation from being partisan and political and cultural to, hey, there's this Jesus and this kingdom that changes everything. Can we get rid of all the other debris right now? Just focus on the main thing being the main thing with persuasion, sincerity, controlled by the love of Christ, not evaluating humans, but rather trying to reconcile them and be ambassadors to them. See, what this means is, number five in your notes, you're the only him others will see, so wear him well. You and I are the only ones, right? They're going to be able to see Jesus, and to the degree that we're showing him clearly or foggy is going to be a big difference, right? And so everywhere we go and everything we do with everybody that we meet, we want to be like, all right, I got to showcase and share Jesus in this. Like, just my tone and my mannerism and the way I interact with people, all of that, it's just like a hook in the water. Always want to be a hook in the water, because I think that is what moves people. In fact, if anything, I'm beginning to realize is the way we most prove Jesus is legit is Christians behaving awesomely. Like, apologetics back in the day was proving the resurrection, proving the reliability of the Bible, proving, that's not it. We just need to prove Jesus is real because we behave awesomely within our world. And they go, there's something about that I need. There's something about that that I want. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I did a podcast, and actually the link is in your notes today and everything else, but I did a podcast related to the fact that Jesus says, hey, I'm going to make you fishers of people. I'm going to make you anglers. Are you going to follow me? You're going to learn to fish. And so in that podcast, I talk about where we as the anglers also need to be the bait. We need to do both, right? And what do you know about fishing? You have to know how to fish. You need to know where to fish. You need to know the bait that the fish are biting on, right? That's all true. But also in this, it also means when you're trying to figure out the bait, you don't just get to be the angler. You also need to be in the water with the fish. You've got to be the attractant in the water. So it means you got to be with the fish. Can't just always be on the bank, safely away from the fish. You got to be with the fish. And another really important thing about fishing, don't scare the fish, right? Don't scare the fish. Honestly, just this last week, I'm going to have to take a break from social media, but this week, there was so much scaring the fish, right? I kept reading things. I'm like, man, it breaks my heart. Who's going to want to listen to us, man? We just sound so off the rails sometimes and say just the craziest stuff where the fish are like, I don't know what you want, but I don't think you like me. We're not baity enough. We need to be baity. Here's something crazy that Paul says. It's in 1 Corinthians, starts in chapter 8, and he's talking about meat sacrificed to idols, and do you eat it, and do you not eat it, and he gets into this all this detailed stuff, but I love the way he closes it. He says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Don't give offense to the Jews or the Gentiles or the church of God. What on earth is he saying? Break that down. Don't give offense to the Jews who don't believe this way. Don't give offense to the Gentiles who believe that way. And then don't give offense to your fellow Christians. Thank you, Paul. Impossible. He's like, yeah, I know. Feel the pressure, baby. Feel the pressure. Then he says this. It's so funny to me. I, too, try to please everyone in everything I do. You ever been told, if you try to please all the people all the time, you'll fail? Paul's like, challenge accepted, you know, like that's his heart. He goes, I don't just do what's best for me, I do what is best for others that they may be saved. And then it goes into chapter 11, verse 1, worst break in all the English Bible versions there is. Between chapter 10, verse 1 of chapter 11 should be in chapter 10, 100%. Because he says this and he goes, you should imitate me just as I imitate Christ. He's like, how do I imitate Christ? I do what's best for others that they may be saved. I try to please all the people, the Jews who don't believe, the Gentiles who don't believe, the Jews and Gentiles who do believe. I am making an investment into all the parties. In other words, he's like, man, I'm just a billboard for Jesus. Come and join me. I'm going to try to do that to the best of my ability. So from that, real fast here, just mastering the tone and tools for inviting people to consider Jesus, a couple things. Again, there's another Barna report that I was looking at. It was just really cool. I found it helpful. The link is in your app notes as well as the link for the next podcast I'll mention. But the question was asked, imagine a Christian you would be interested in learning from. So maybe you don't know them, but imagine if you could have your ideal Christian that could teach you as a disbelieving, non-religious person, what would you want their characteristics to be? How would you describe them? The top thing. They said that they would listen to me without judging me. Like that would move the needle. That they're honest about their own doubts was number two. That they would just connect with me, that they too maybe have a couple of like, I don't know what to do with this. That would be huge. They don't force a conclusion. Number three, top thing. They care about me as a person, not just a target, but as a person. They would also allow others to draw their own conclusions. They'd be interested in me even if I'm not a Christian. I don't come around to it. They're going to continue to care about me and love me. They would understand me. They've experienced struggles themselves and share that with me. They're aware of the inconsistencies in their own perspective, and then they demonstrate interest in other people's stories and lives as well. I mean, if you want some simple tone stuff, that's some simple tone stuff that does it. And then if you'd like some tools, again, I recently did another podcast, episode 300, links in the notes, and it was just like 10 ways to kind of like, hey, man, you can start to do this. You can play with some of this. Here's some simple questions. Here's some easy entry points. Here's some things to care about. And it's just practical, low-hanging fruit practical. And all of it's designed to really just show a real version of Jesus that the world needs to see and show real love for people wherever they're at. And to hope that we can take this and we don't just take it and we hide it, nor do we take this and we just huck it at society, but rather we're trying to hand it one-to-one, right? Here's my life to your life, my Jesus to your life, and maybe Jesus will become important in your life too. Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, I thank you that you call us to this. And I know there may be some in the room or some online, and you're like, man, I don't follow Jesus, but I want to follow Jesus. Again, I'm giving it to you rapid fire, but it means you acknowledge I've gone my own way. I've done my own thing. I've chosen my own path. The Bible calls that sin. But then Jesus is like, man, I came to forgive your sin, to deal with your sin, to give you a new life. That's why I came and I died and I rose to give you this thing that you need and long for. Even something inside you tells you there's a hole there and it needs to be filled. Jesus is the one that does that. And if you make that your prayer and your words, he hears you, brings you into the family, right, and begins to use you to bring change to the world. Jesus, again, I thank you that you call us to this task, to be ambassadors, to care, to showcase you, to show you. And even today, as we get ready to take communion, man, all of that is about, like, you modeled this thing to us. You came to deal with our problem. You came to give us the solution. And so we remember what you've done so that we remember what we're supposed to do. We know that you gave your life to give us life so we can go live life so that others can find life in you as well. Help us to do that thing. We thank you, Jesus, and we love you and praise you in your name.